Hi, this is Dick Miller. You're listening to Junk Food Cinema on Film School Rejects. Who are these guys?
Welcome, Junkions and Candarians, to another groovy episode of Junk Food Cinema right here on FilmSchoolRejects.com.
Dead by Dawn. Dead by Dawn.
Dead by Dawn.
Dead by Dawn.
Dead.com. Dead.com.
Dead by Dawn. Dead by Dawn.
This is, of course, the weekly cult and exploitation film cast that is so good, it just has to be fattening, that will definitely swallow your soul, as well as several Twinkies along the way. I am Brian Salisbury. He is C. Robert Cargill.
Yes.
Correct.
That is correct. Yeah. Today,
not factually inaccurate.
Not factually inaccurate. Well, normally you're like, oh, he's a lieutenant in Megaforce. Oh,
they
he's
know
a screenwriter.
This.
He has a book, Sea of Rust, available in stores now.
He has a book. It's called The Necronomicon Ex Mortis.
It is in stores now. So, yeah, you just kind of threw that out to me. I was like, oh, okay, we're not doing any bits with that. Okay, awesome. Yes, so that is factually correct. I am C. Robert Cargill, and together we are the Wonder Twins.
Form of a classic horror film that we're covering this week that we're super excited about.
Shape of Sea of Rust, available in stores now.
Look at you. Look at you, like, backflipping into self-promotion. I love it. It's great. You are the Mary Lou Retton of self-promotion, and you should be proud of that. Speaking
God
of things...
God bless us, everyone.
Speaking of things we're proud of, our entire back catalog is on iTunes as well as on Blog Talk Radio, which is who hosts us. Thank you very much, Blog Talk. You can also follow us on Twitter at Junk Food Cinema and like the podcast on Facebook, facebook.com/junkfoodcinema. If you really like the show, if you want to... Maybe it's to a level that's possibly unhealthy, but we're not going to judge you because
if you just need an extra 20, 30 minutes every week to hang out with Brian and Cargill, need a little alone time with Brian and Cargill where we just talk as pals.
Yeah. If you want to flip on that reel to reel one more time and hear more of our demonic chanting, you can go to patreon.com/junkfoodcinema and support us. For as little as $4 a month, you get access to all of our bonus content, which includes things like Alamodes, which includes things like Summer of 77.
Yeah,
mailbags.
We might be talking about a movie called Suspiria this week.
Ooh,
we Suspiria. Might be talking about a movie called Death Note next week. Like, you
Death
never
Note.
Know. I mean, we totally know.
We,
but
we
you
know.
Never know that both of those things have actually already been recorded and are totally going to be available for the, as low, low price of just $1 a week.
You don't know. And as I mentioned before, we are covering something, we're kind of treading upon sacred ground, which is really interesting considering the movie we're talking about, to phrase it that way.
Well, you know what? That's what this week very much is for us. We are talking between this and our Summer of 77. We are talking about movies that are sacred cows, that how dare you speak ill of The Evil Dead. How dare you speak ill of Suspiria? Like, this is a running theme between both of these movies, that these are so ingrained in the pop culture of hardcore movie fans, horror fans in particular.
Yeah.
That, man, you got to be careful sometimes.
Them's fighting words.
Like, you had a little thing on Twitter today while you had rewatched the movie and asked a very legitimate, interesting question.
Yeah.
And boy, howdy, did some fists come flying.
The word dogpile comes to mind. My question was simply, by the way, the movie we're talking about as we wrap up, and by the way,
as you saw the picture of it on this fucking thing when you downloaded it or streamed it.
Yeah, it's 1987's Evil Dead 2. Alias Evil Dead 2.
Dead by Dawn.
Dead by Dawn.
Four years ago, in this quiet forest, in this cozy cabin, something happened. Something so frightening. Something so deadly. Something so evil. We prayed it would never happen again. Now, from the creator of Evil Dead, comes Evil Dead 2.
Swallow your soul!
Evil Dead 2. Dead. by dawn.
Oh, that's going to be a running thing through this whole episode.
Dead by dawn.
Oh, man. Turn down the volume a little bit on your recording device, because we're going to be making that sound.
I'll swallow your soul.
Swallow this. So Evil Dead 2 is a very interesting, like, for those of
it's
you...
It's a super interesting movie.
Oh, my gosh, for so many reasons. And it is legendary. We are talking about one of the... When you talk to horror fans, when you talk to, like... The dick measuring contest of being a true horror fan. One of them, for sure, is talking about how much you prefer Evil Dead 2 to Evil Dead. I feel like that's a thing I've entered into, or I've been sucked into more conversations about this with horror fans than any other subject.
And we're going to have that conversation.
We are going to have that conversation. But what I brought forward on Twitter is whether Evil Dead 2 is a sequel or a remake.
And or that, a reimagining.
And that is one of the most interesting things to discuss. Now, of course, I got kind of dogpiled on because a lot of people are like, oh, it's clearly a sequel because it recaps the events of the first movie at the beginning. And I'm like, I'm going to stop you right there. The first Evil Dead, 1981, is a, you know, for all of its weirdness, is a pretty straightforward movie about four friends who go to a cabin in the woods. Somebody manages to read from the Necronomicon, unleashing demons and evil in the forest. And weird things happen as a result, but that's, I mean, it's a straightforward narrative. This movie opens with the same character, Ash, played by the legendary Bruce Campbell, going to that cabin, not again, but for the first time with his girlfriend, not the two other people.
It feels like the first time.
It feels like the very first film, except that he's going with, like, it's a different arrangement of people in the same car going to the same location. He's playing the same character.
Same fucking car, same fucking dude.
And yet, what happens, what transpires, the circumstances are completely different, even though certain touchstones, it's so hard to explain. Because it's so goddamn confusing.
And then Drew McWeeny came in and Chinatowned you.
He totally Chinatowned me. Because I was like trying, I was like, okay, you say that, but what about this? What about this? What about this? And his response was so perfect, which was just, it's Evil Dead. It's never going to make sense. And I tweeted back
it's
at him.
Chinatown,
Jake. Did you just fucking Chinatown me? Because I will not be Chinatowned, even though he's right. Like, these movies, much like Suspiria, are so dreamlike and outside the realm of logic that you can actually get away with calling this a sequel, despite the fact that it is, in fact, a fucking remake.
I kind of disagree.
That it's a remake? Or that it's a sequel?
No. neither. I disagree that it's the logic is so dreamlike.
Oh, okay.
I feel that here's... So here, let's just lay it out. The truth of it is, Evil Dead was a first film made by a teenage filmmaker.
Yeah.
Who, a guy, I've always felt that Evil Dead is a movie exactly like Last House on the Left.
Or to me, it feels like Cannibal the Musical.
Well, okay, I could go with that as well. But I liken this film to Last House on the Left because it is a first film by a legendary filmmaker, someone who is unmistakably brilliant, trying their hand at a narrative and not getting it all right. Like, it is, he has not found his voice. He has not found his tone. He is telling, in this one, he's telling a straightforward narrative, a straightforward horror movie that is pretty much him aping all the stuff he really loves and coming up with enough new material that you're able to look at him and go, oh, you're a new voice. But he hasn't found his voice yet in this movie. He hasn't found his voice in Evil Dead. And Evil Dead 2 is where Raimi truly finds his voice and goes, oh, this is who I am as a filmmaker, and has learned so much over the preceding few years of working on stuff and getting stuff made that now it's like, oh, okay, this is where I need to be. And we see a reinvention of him. And what he does is he takes that same film he made before with a lot of the same elements and he makes the movie he wish he had made the first time. And that's how I've always looked at Evil Dead 2 is Evil Dead 2 is a reimagining of Raimi as a filmmaker and going, no, I'm not that guy making the same old monster movie or slasher movie that everyone else is making. I'm a guy doing something totally different and breaking the rules and rewriting the rules, because the minute this movie starts, we then get two movies that are inextricably linked, that the logic totally works in terms of what it's doing. So much so that Evil Dead 2 is both a remake and a prequel to the movie that he really wanted to make.
Army of Darkness.
Which is Army of Darkness. Yeah. A movie called Army of Darkness because Evil Dead 2, hold on, children, strap in. Evil Dead 2 did not do well enough to warrant making an Evil Dead 3, but he was able to get the money and make an Evil Dead 3. They just didn't want to call it Evil Dead 3, so they called it Army of Darkness. Like, it's literally called that so that they could act like it was a new movie and get people to come and see the third movie in a franchise that nobody was paying to go see. Like, it's so weird to think about this franchise as being one that didn't make a lot of money and wasn't a huge hit in an era when they were giving sequels to fucking everything.
And we will talk about that next week.
Yeah, they were just fucking handing out sequels left and right in the late 80s and early 90s. They're like, where can we send Jason now? You know, Leprechaun, where can we send him now?
Let's send him to space. Oh, wait, they came from space.
But let's go there anyway. Let's go. I mean, it is stupid what was happening. And Evil Dead 2 could not get an Evil Dead 3, but it had to be Army of Darkness.
You know what? That's a really interesting point you make, in that sequels in this era were, where can we send the monster? It's like, go to space. Go to, you know,
The hood.
And this movie's like, we're going back to the exact same fucking cabin.
We're going to New York.
We're not going. This is not Deadites Take Manhattan. This is just the same fucking cabin, and we're going there again.
But Raimi this time does all the things he wish he had done the first time.
And I get that. And I get that there is a certain amount of workshop going on in Evil Dead 2, where it's like he's flexing his muscles with a slightly, you know, bigger budget. And being able to do a lot of the things that he wanted to do. I get that. But I don't know. I've always kind of... And I must say that this opinion was based upon, you know, many years of watching these and thinking that I preferred Evil Dead just because it wasn't as much... I don't want to ever say that Evil Dead 2 is indulgent, but it does definitely, like, he will take certain chunks out of that movie to just play with things. And, you know, he is, like, playing with this effect or that. And it's not in service of the story necessarily. I point you to the laughing deer head on the wall that, to me, just doesn't, like... That whole sequence is fun. There's a lot of sequences in this movie that are fun. But I think that the story is so much tighter in the first Evil Dead. And, yes, it doesn't look as good. It's not as enjoyable because they're not... Because those things are absent. Because they're not playing with things. And I get that. But... I thought it was a little bit tighter, and I enjoyed it.
Oh, you're absolutely right. Like, in terms of storytelling and classic structure, it is much tighter. This movie is fucking bonkers, but that's what everyone loves about this movie, is that there is no other movie quite like this. There are a couple movies that evoke things like Evil Dead 2, but you will never find... It's one of those movies that I call it the Primal Fear problem. Primal Fear, which we will eventually cover, take a drink, everyone, was a movie that was really popular in the video store era. And like years after it came out, I'm like 6-7 years, you would have people walk into the video store and go, dude, I just watched this movie, Primal Fear. I need to see something just like it. Can you show me a movie that's... Point out a movie that's just like Primal Fear, and it's like, I really can't. And they're like, why not? Don't you know movies? It's like, I do, and Primal Fear is really kind of a one-of-a-kind special film that you're asking me for a twisty drama, you know, thriller that isn't predictable and isn't bad from this era. Like, there's only a handful of them, and this one really sticks the landing in a way that most others don't. It's like, you know, yeah, I could say, have you seen The Usual Suspects? Well, yeah, I've seen that. It's like, well, are you a Hitchcock fan? Yeah, I've seen the Hitchcock. Well, it's like, well, you've seen the Primal Fear's one of the best ones.
Are you familiar with Linda Fiorentino? Yes, then you've kind of seen everything.
So all that to say, you can't... When someone watches Evil Dead 2 for the first time, well, what can I watch that's like it? Well, Army of Darkness. Well, I've seen Army of... I want something like Evil Dead. It's like, yeah, about that. There's not a lot of them that actually work.
That would be like watching a Tarsem Singh film and going, I want something just like that, not by Tarsem Singh.
Yeah.
Good luck.
And I mean, like, the first act of this movie, structurally speaking, is fucking bonkers.
Okay.
I'm going to keep saying
that. At least that's been acknowledged.
Yes. Because... By minute six, set your watches, junkies. By minute six, Bruce Campbell and his girlfriend have gone to the cabin, discovered a tape accidentally unleashed evil. She has been possessed. He has fought her. He had to cut her head off, and he's buried her. He buries her at minute 6. That's how quick this movie gets into the first act. The first act has not even gotten to where most movies get to the inciting incident, because for this movie, the inciting incident is well into the horror going off. This movie, you know, is just crazy how it's structured. And the first act is a fucking one-man Three Stooges movie.
Okay, thank you. I'm so glad you said that, because if you've listened to this podcast for any length of time, you know that one of the things that really lights a fire under me that I love talking about is the evolution of franchises. Like, to me, I like watching franchises from start to finish and looking at it almost like a Darwinian chart and just watching, like, oh, this is the, you know, this is how these things change. And the crazier that change and the craters that they fall into or the heights that they achieve midway through, like, and basically should start high and then just gradually slope down. But when a franchise manages to A, do the opposite, or B, disconnect from itself in the middle in a way that's completely unprecedented, like, that's when I really start to get interested. And the tonal shift between Evil Dead and Evil Dead 2, really, like, if you looked at that chart, it would be two different charts.
Yeah, no, that's why I honestly consider this a reinvention, not only of the franchise, but a reinvention of Raimi. Yeah. Like, Raimi never again makes a movie like Evil Dead.
Very
like,
true.
From that point on, all of his horror movies, even the ones that have a definitive straight narrative, have a very different feel to them. Like, they aren't what you saw in his first movie. And it was just a very first film kind of thing. And that's a thing that I really feel that way, because he was so young. Like, we talked about this in previous episodes. We talked about this when Romero died, that great picture of Raimi and Romero. Google that picture if you haven't seen it yet. Look up the picture of Raimi and Romero at Cannes in 1983, I think it is. Mm-hmm. Dear Christ Almighty, he's a fucking boy.
Yeah.
Like, he is, like, you're like, oh my God, that's clearly Sam Raimi, but the dude hasn't even sprouted pubes yet. Like, sure. He is so fucking young. And this is a guy making a movie before most people ever get a chance to make a movie. So they don't get that experience like most writers have, where your first novel is complete garbage. It's like Bradbury said, if you want to become a novelist, sit down and write your first novel, go out in the backyard, bury it, come back inside and write your first novel. Like, you make so many mistakes. You don't know who you are as a writer yet. And he made so many mistakes on Evil Dead, just where to put the camera, how to pace it, how to tell the story. But he did so much right and invented a very cool shot. Like, he came up with something that no one else had done before that just kind of wowed all these other horror filmmakers. Like, dude, you invented something at this age. What the fuck are you going to do when you polished up? And what does he do when he polishes up? He makes Evil Dead and then Army of Darkness.
Yeah.
Like, that's who Sam Raimi became. And it is phenomenal. But yeah, the tonal shift here is radical. But I think that's why this series works. Because there's never a point where any of the movies is just like any of the others.
Yeah, and the segue that I let get away from me was, you mentioned the Three Stooges, and literally in my notes right in front of me, Evil Dead 2 is like all three of the Stooges Cronenberg themselves into one entity, and then they're transported into a Salvador Dali painting of a haunted house.
Yes.
Like, it is slapstick absurd horror. That's what this movie is. And while there was a certain amount of levity in Evil Dead, so it's not completely different, it's still completely different, because this is a movie where, like, literally at one point clocks and lamps and fucking taxidermy heads are laughing at the hero after he's cut his own hand off and he's had a fight with his own hand and
he's laughing with them,
and he's laughing with them,
losing his fucking mind.
It really, it's a deep dive into, like, mental illness. this movie.
Well, that's the interesting thing about that scene and that moment is it becomes a very real question at that moment, whether or not he's sane. And yeah. It forces you to ask the question, was his girlfriend really possessed, or is he being fucked with by demons and he just murdered his fucking girlfriend? So, like, you start to ask this question so that once there's a big sound at the door, he fucking just fires. And at this point, you're like, you know, of course he does. And then there's people there.
I like where you're going with this, because the idea that maybe Ash isn't a reliable narrator. So maybe what's going on, and the reason there's disparity between, because the second one starts with a recap of the first one that's not the same as the first movie. Maybe all of this has happened. He's been caught, and it's like a Rashomon situation where they bring him in and interview him three times about the same events, and he tells a different story every time because he's completely fucking lost his mind. Like, if that were the context, all of this would make sense to me. All of the, like, and then it's like, in the third time, it's like, okay, now he's in the 1300s. Guys, we can't trust what he's telling us about what happened in the woods. He's in the fucking dark ages now. I don't know what's going on with this third one. But yeah, you do have a lot of slapstick going on. And this is why I feel, A, Evil Dead 2 is more highly regarded than Evil Dead 1. And B, it's a fucking classic amongst horror fans, is the effects work. And the camera work in this movie is spellbinding.
It's bizarro.
Yeah.
It is so strange and delightfully so. And that's why, again, none of this is any of this. The only thing that you see in Evil Dead that is at all visually like Evil Dead 2 is we're strapping the camera to the board and we're running with it.
Right. Which actually, they up that. Did you notice?
Yes.
Because it goes through the car as opposed to over it.
Not only does it go through the car, we then have a great, amazing shot where they literally in one shot are running through this set, following Bruce Campbell through the set in that way. And it is so unbelievable to look at.
Yeah.
Like, it is just, like, I look at it now and go, how many times did Bruce Campbell have to run through that to get that right? Having watched any number of cameramen bump into walls or bump into lights, to have a camera strapped to a board and run through a house like that in that quick succession with that geography in that tight of space, like, did they destroy cameras? Jesus fucking
yeah,
Christ.
Yeah, and I love the fact that the tonal shift. They even make fun of that, because there's a great, like, the joke that makes me laugh the hardest in this movie is that tracking shot where the demon wind, or whatever you want to call it, is chasing him through the cabin, and then it loses him and it stops, and it, like, literally the wind looks around like, where the fuck did he go? Like, that joke is so bonkers Looney Tunes, and I still, like, it makes me laugh so hard every time I see it. Because it's literally like, you hear the roar and it's chasing him around. And then it's like, he dives into a room and it doesn't follow him. And it's like, wait, what? Huh? It's just like, it has a sense of humor even about the things that it's kind of retreading and improving upon from the first movie.
Yeah, and it's really, that's what really works about this movie is this movie never forces you to take it seriously, but it's always fun. And it's a really fun retelling, and it's why I prefer this to Evil Dead. I know you feel the opposite. You prefer Evil Dead is better than Evil Dead 2.
That was how I felt. And I...
Are you starting to take it in a bit more?
I'm starting to take it in. I still don't think Evil Dead 2 is the superior movie, but I'm starting to see them as sort of complementary to each other in a way that you kind of have to appreciate both on the same level. Like, it kind of doesn't make sense to me to assign either one prominence, because you really have to watch both to appreciate the whole package.
Yeah. For Evil Dead to be a first film by a kid that young, Jesus Christ, yeah. Is that an achievement?
Absolutely.
It's a hell of an achievement. So you can't disparage that. But man, the stuff he does here, is just on a technical level, is just great. I mean, the only flaw this movie has is he doesn't have a budget for this movie, really. Like,
which is interesting.
So some of the effects, some of the stop motion work is a little goofy.
Yes, but it fits with the tone that he's going for. And I don't know if that was a survival tactic or what, but what's interesting about the fact that he didn't have a lot of money and the way this movie got made, because you mentioned, you know, Evil Dead was not a movie that they initially were like clamoring to make a sequel to. And I mean, this is, you know, 6 years after the originals come out. This movie was kind of secretly produced by Dino De Laurentiis. And if you watch this movie, at the very beginning, it says Rosebud Pictures. And the reason for that is that Dino De Laurentiis could not produce, he was forbidden to release an unrated movie through his own company. So he made up a company called Rosebud to finance and release Evil Dead 2. Because despite all of its best efforts to avoid being banned in the UK, Evil Dead 2, for a long time, was one of the video nasties. It was one of the movies banned in the UK. And knowing that was a possibility, Laurentiis, who, by the way, was turned on to Sam Raimi by Stephen King, while Stephen King was making Maximum Overdrive, which De Laurentiis was producing. So if you love Evil Dead 2, you need to thank two people. You need to thank Stephen King and cocaine, because those two things in tandem convinced Dino De Laurentiis to produce a sequel to Evil Dead, and that's what we have here.
And yeah, and it's such a crazy way that all came together.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize De Laurentiis did it secretly, because it's kind of an open story now.
It is now.
But yeah.
But if you think about it, look, when you watch the beginning of the movie, do you see his name on any of it?
No, but it totally makes sense. But also the limited budget also makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. We need to actually at some point do an episode where we talk about the video nasties. If you are in video,
crazy story,
there is a great documentary online that Jake West directed.
I love that documentary.
Yeah. On the video nasties. Highly recommended. It's on Shudder. It's a really, really interesting look at how the video store phenomenon affected so many of my London friends. Like, you know, like half the people in that documentary are people I hang out with every time I go to London. They're just awesome, you know, UK horror filmmakers. And it's and it's how it affected them. And then what happened when a bunch of conservatives tried to ban these movies and have where they literally had the police go to video stores and pull out copies of stuff like Evil Dead and The Driller Killer and Slumber Party Massacre and destroy them because these are harming the fabric of our society. They're one day going to result in a podcast where two guys sit around in their living room and discuss the merits of Evil Dead 2.
God forbid, burn them all! Burn them all!
So yeah, definitely, you definitely need to check out Video Nasties.
By the way, one of the people who went to battle with that censory board more than any other filmmaker, Sam Raimi.
There you go. This movie does get really gross. Like, in fact, he does something. Let's talk about some of the interesting flourishes of this movie. Because, like, the plot is the demons show up. They accidentally unleash the demons. The demons start fucking with them, and they've got to try to get out.
And then more dead meats show up just to be dead meats.
Just to be dead meats. That's the whole fucking movie.
Maybe it was supposed to be Dead Meat by Dawn.
Now, actually, I'm going to Cargill explain to you.
I was going to say that the glasses are being pushed way up the nose bridge
actually,
right now.
Actually, this movie is really setting up our hero for a third film, which this movie completely thets up. No, they do a really good job of setting up this idea that there's this hero in the past who vanquished the evil. And when you watch this film in Army of Darkness together, you create this very cool cycle of how this idiot accidentally destroys this really stupid evil. Because at the same time, the thing about the evil and the Evil Dead is it's not very smart. It's not clever. And so, but neither are our heroes. And that's part of the fun. So some of the flourishes I find interesting are all the colors and viscosities he uses of body fluids.
And there was that all ties back into what we were talking about. That was his way of trying to avoid getting banned, getting that X rating was if the blood doesn't look like blood, then I'm okay. Right.
If you watch, several horror movies in the late 90s, early aughts, you will notice the blood looks really dark and black. Or really brownish. And that's what a bunch of horror filmmakers were trying to do. They would do some color correction or they would use different colors of blood to get around to make very bloody films, but get around the ratings board. So yeah, but I love that he does that. Like there's at some points, the blood looks like movie blood. And then other points, it looks like red paint from the old, you know, the old style of blood from the Hammer movies.
Yeah.
And then it becomes this black ichor. And then when he chops up one of the deadites, it's green slime. Like the number and types of different body fluids that get sprayed on our characters and around this set is kind of unreal.
It's like a spirograph of gross. This entire cabin. Just all over the place. Not a spiro. What's the one I'm thinking of where you dip, you spin the wheel and then you put paint in it? That's not a spirograph. That's a, do you know what I'm talking about?
I do, and I don't know
it's
called.
It's like the art kit, but there was like a spinner in it, and you would just dump paint into it, and it would like make, I don't know, something.
I know, Light, Bright, and I Low Easy Bake Oven. Like, that's...
Was there ever a combination of those two things where you could actually cook, like you could create something out of lights and then, like, burn it? Oh, that was just Light, Bright, actually, because those fuckers would always catch fire. Yeah. That's a good point. But yeah, you're right, and I do like that about the movie, that there's just, like, it's the kind of thing that when you hear that the remake of the... By the way, I don't know if we've ever talked about it on a podcast, but the remake of Evil Dead... I fucking dig the hell out of it.
I am very mixed on the remake of Evil Dead. I don't hate it, but I'm not in love with it. Like, I admire things that it does. I like that director a lot.
Fede. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I love his last film. I mean, we talked about his last film in A La Mode a year ago.
Yeah.
Don't Breathe. You know, the thing is that they work. I think it's one of those movies that's trying to be clever about a pop culture touchstone, and I just don't enjoy that. And I don't like the fact in that movie that we don't know who Ash is, we don't know who we're rooting for, and we're waiting to find out who Ash is. I don't see a reason for that. And the dialogue of the characters in the first act of that movie is a mess. It is just the first act of that movie, I hate everyone. And it's especially from a director who's directed other films that have really tight scripts. For that, I was just like, I don't care about these people at all, and this writing is awful. The gore in that movie,
yeah. The
is
whole point
tremendous.
I was getting to before you sucked the demon wind out of my sails,
sorry,
was the fact that it doesn't surprise me that when you hear about the remake using an actual tanker truck full of fake blood, you're like, yeah, all you got to do is look at Evil Dead 2 and the amount of various colored fake blood that they're using and go, okay, that's the natural progression up.
Going back to that question, is this movie a remake or a sequel? All three of those movies include a tree scene, but this one doesn't make it a rape. It makes it a murder.
No, this one makes it what came out last year? Poulter what? Yeah, do that. Let's have a grabby tree possessed by a demon. We're going to do that too, Tobe, so rest in peace. I really did feel that. I was watching this. I was like, this reminds me so much of the killer tree in Poltergeist.
Well, yeah, but in the first Evil Dead, you've got the honest-to-God tree
right,
rape.
But it doesn't... It's not... It's vines and it's sound design. It's not a face in a literal fucking tree reaching through a window and grabbing somebody. Like, that was the part that...
Oh, no, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about when Bobby Joe runs off.
Yes,
and the trees start grabbing her, and it's like, oh, yes. Like, the first time you watch it, it's like, they're doing the tree rape again.
That's where
it's
you think
the tree
it's going.
Rape again. Yeah. And it's not. It gets right to the point where you're like, oh, it's the tree. No, we're just going to kill her with a tree. And so I mean, that's the thing that really kind of everyone was, the big hot take talking point about the Evil Dead remake was they went for the tree rape and did the tree rape. And
well, what's I actually found in doing research, I dug up an original 1986 behind the scenes. It's not a documentary. It wasn't made by anyone outside of the production. It was just them with their own video cameras filming shit.
I actually, honest to God, I've seen it.
Yeah.
Like, you mentioned it before. You're like, oh, yeah, I dug this up. And it's like, oh, wait, that was the thing that was on the special edition VHS that they put out in the 90s that you'd watch the movie. And at the end, they had this full, like, almost full-length documentary.
It was great because it was just them fucking around with the camera as they are testing the effects, and you get to see a baby-faced Greg Nicotero.
Oh, yeah.
Everyone's fucking baby-faced in this I keep saying documentary, but in this fuck around footage. But one of the things I did see that really, like, after watching it was so great was this scene you're talking about. I got to see a stunt woman covered in vines being dragged behind a dirt bike. And you get the sense of just how little money they really had between that and everywhere they go that they're filming or they're storing. It feels like someone's garage.
Oh, this movie had so little money that everything involving the bridge is stop motion.
Yeah.
Like, it's literally like they do the bridge, and that's really cute. That scene, the scene where the car is driving across the bridge, is adorable. But the one that showcases the cheapness of it is when they have the stop motion Ash next to the next to the broken up bridge screaming at the sky, and it's like, wow.
I just imagine Ray Harryhausen turning around in the theater like, what the fuck, Ray?
Really? What guys? And it's really funny.
Yeah.
I had completely forgotten about that shot. I have not watched the movie in years and sat down to rewatch it. I was like, oh, that's right. Yeah, I forgot there's stop motion Ash, like, here to go.
Yeah, I love it when Ash took on the blockheads and then he skated into a book, because that's the Ash you're presented with in that scene. He's just Gumby.
Oh, yeah. Well, God, the stuff he does to himself in this movie. First of all, you know, we do need to talk about the brilliance of Bruce Campbell. We've talked so much about the brilliance of Raimi. We need to talk about the brilliance of Bruce Campbell. The physical comedy in this film is what he's really noted for. You know, it's so
demanding. The slapstick, the level of physical comedy in the slapstick in this is highly demanding. So kudos to him for not only doing it, but for a portion of the film, carrying the entire thing just on the shoulders of that.
I've seen him in person a couple of times. Like, I mean, I've met him a number of occasions at film festival and such, but I saw him, like, back in the early aughts. He was doing a tour at a lot of, it was part of what he did to make a living, was he would tour around at movie theaters and show one of the movies that he was in and do a talk and do a Q&A, and because he's really great with a crowd. And so I saw him do Q&As of just about my career, talk about my career. And the number of people who are, one, jackasses to him is astounding.
What?
Astounding.
You are kidding me.
Yeah, no, just the people thought it would be funny because, well, he's a famous funny guy who does B-movies, so I can be rude and be funnier than him.
Oh, fuck those people.
Well, yeah, but the brilliance is they think they can be funnier in front of a crowd than Bruce Campbell, so Bruce Campbell always puts them in their place and makes them look like a fucking moron. But it just astounds me. Like by the second time I went, I'm like, nobody be the jerk. Nobody be the, oh, there he is. All right, Bruce is going to destroy. But bam, levels him.
Wow.
But every time I've seen him, somebody has stood up and said, Mr. Campbell, I just have one question. Can you do the flip for us? Every time.
Mm-hmm.
And he talks about it. He's like, every time I come out on stage, somebody asks me to do the flip. No, I'm not going to do the flip. And he would go into this whole big thing about, I'm not your dancing monkey. I'm not your, and then he would take a step forward and then he would do the flip, and as if it were by accident, and it kills. I'm sure he can't do it anymore, but he was doing it 15 years ago. And just every time he'd go into it, you'd usually wait for it. There it is. And he'd do the flip. That is impressive. And that's what everyone talks about. What the thing that impresses me the most, though, about his entire performance in this are the scenes when his hand is possessed and his hand has knocked him unconscious and his hand is crawling him across the floor.
Yeah.
And you look at his face and he looks passed the fuck out. Not another muscle in his body is moving, but his hand is,
yeah.
And his hand is dragging him. Now, of course, there's some movie magic going on with that. And yet, that's Bruce Campbell's hand, and he's doing such a great job at just moving himself across the floor without showing any other triggers. And it's just there's so much nuance to just that little bit. That's where I'm like, holy shit, this guy's so good at physical comedy. Like everything else, from the faces he makes to the close-ups, you know, to the one-liners, you know, the groovy to, you know, the flip and, you know, fighting with his hand and cutting his own hand off. Like all of that physical comedy works because he really was deeply committed and always took every moment in one of his Sam Raimi films dead fucking serious.
And that is Dick Van Dyke level you know, physical comedy mastery. And coming from me, that's not a small compliment. Like,
no, you're a big Dick Van Dyke
fan. I'm a huge Dick
Van
Dyke
fan. You love your dick.
I do.
You love a lot of dick sometimes.
Nitro back in the box. No, I just think he's, like, Dick Van Dyke, even into his 60s, is somebody that did pratfalls like nobody's business. So, yeah, to be compared to the, I think I am paying him a huge compliment. But one of the things on that, I keep saying documentary, in that footage that I kept noticing was Bruce Campbell could take direction like so fucking. It didn't matter if he had, you know, the opaque contact lenses that were probably killing his eyes. It didn't matter if he was face down in a puddle. It didn't matter if they were spraying fake blood in his face. Raimi would say things like, okay, bigger, okay, open your eyes, okay, you know, I need you to move back and forth, I need more of this, more, and he would just, he was a consummate professional the entire time.
Yeah.
And they, and also watching him, like, literally they show in the footage the scene of him flying backwards into that cabinet, and like all the shelves come down on all those dishes, and it's just like, Jesus Christ, man, how did somebody not get killed on this set? Especially Bruce Campbell, who's doing all of this shit. Also, they show them testing that shot of moving through the house, like they're moving through like the post-production area. And so it's like, you just see a camera moving and hear Raimi going, now, now. And like things are moving, like people are pulling strings to move a stool or a mop handle. Okay, now a door flies open. And they get to the end and it's a grip who is facing away from the camera. And he turns around right at the last second and he's holding a... what do you call it? He's holding a headshot of Bruce Campbell just so that they can figure out exactly where the shot's going to end. So it like I was fascinated watching all of this footage and how somebody had just put it all up on YouTube. And at one point they do say like, oh, this is for the behind the scenes tape that's going to be released. So they did they release like entire making of documentaries on VHS tape?
Very rarely, but it did. It did happen. You know, some of there were. In the 90s, there was this, it was really the first time where cinephiles were starting to be taken seriously as something for not necessarily people who just wanted to make movies, but people who enjoyed movies. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that was the big attraction for Laserdisc, was Laserdisc was the first time they had this room to just throw on making ofs. Yeah. And you could actually watch with different soundtracks. So there were commentary tracks. Like, that was mind-blowing. I remember when the day that the Boogie Nights Laserdisc came out and we all went over to my buddy's place so we had already seen Boogie Nights 3 times in a theater. Now we were going to watch it with commentary.
Now who's excited about Dick? Come on.
Yeah.
Come on, Cargill.
Dude. I'm a fucking rock star. It's, dude, they, oh, that...
More like a cock star, but that's...
That commentary, that's one of the commentaries that got people into commentaries. Because it's such a great, honest commentary.
Yeah.
But yeah, so the VHS for Evil Dead 2, that was like the 10th anniversary, I think it was, had a tape. It was either at the end of the tape or it was a second tape. It was 2 boxes. I can't remember which one it was. But yeah, Evil Dead has been released. These movies have been released and re-released so many times that like it was a joke that anytime Anchor Bay was running low on money that we would re-release a new Evil Dead or Evil Dead 2.
Well, I thought it was weird they released that one version that just said Evil Dead : ATM. I was like, I don't understand. I don't get what that means.
Give us your money.
Just give us your money. Give us the money. Come on.
It's you know you want another version of Evil Dead. You know you want it.
You know, we're going back to, you know, the idea is this a sequel? Is this a remake? Which is, you know, kind of been the theme throughout this whole episode. And we talked about how many times it's been released. But what we didn't mention yet, and what I probably would get, you know, skewered for not talking about if we ended this episode without me mentioning it, the rights, apparently, to the first Evil Dead were in flux in such a way that the idea, and again, this is just conjecture, the idea was that this movie was going to open with 10 minutes of the first movie as a recap, but they literally didn't have the rights to show footage from their own first movie, which is why they had to kind of redo it. Now, that doesn't explain why it's redone in such a way that it's not at all the same number of people, the same storyline. Like, it doesn't explain everything, but it is an interesting nugget in the whole kind of pastiche of whether this is a sequel or a remake. But this is also why, you know, what further muddying the issue, you have scenes that are completely recreated. The demon in the basement, her coming back from the grave and doing that weird kind of stop motion dance. They add to it, of course, but there are touchstones from the first movie that are repeated throughout the course of the story, which again further muddles the is it a sequel, is it a remake argument.
I'm really curious. I've never talked to anybody who's had this experience because most of my friends are just a little too young. Just a lot too young, really. Like even fucking, I don't even know that Weinberg could tell me this or not, but he might be able to. What it was like to have watched the first Evil Dead and then be like, oh, Evil Dead 2 is coming out. I can't wait to see the sequel. And then sit down and see that night or day sequel, like what that experience was like. Like so many of us are seeing it in the post, you know. So many people came around to see Evil Dead or Evil Dead 2 after they saw Army of Darkness at a party. And they're like, what the fuck is this? And they're like, oh, this is Evil Dead 3. And they're like, 3? Like, why don't they just call it that? I don't fucking know.
I can't imagine it's not identical to when you watch Silent Night, Deadly Night 4, and you're like, this isn't Silent Night, Deadly Night 3.
Except that only like four people have ever done that, and you're one of them.
This is why joke is, yes. No one care.
No one care about Silent Night, Deadly Night.
No. Clint Howard doesn't care, and he still gets residuals from it.
I doubt he gets residuals.
Again, only when Anchor Bay needs money.
It might be like that 43-cent check that my buddy gets for having appeared as an extra in Michael.
What, the John Travolta movie?
Yeah. Once every few months, he gets a check in the mail for one time it was 43 cents. Like, that was his residuals.
Well, you know, I'll take what I can get. Oh, my God. Wait, is your friend John Travolta? Now I kind of need to know the answer to this question. Because that would make it an even better story.
That would make it an even better story.
No. And that guy's name was Little
Mikey.
No,
I know. I like also...
Little Johnny Travolta.
Harry Knowles gets checks every once in a while for... No, that's not who it is.
Oh.
But Harry Knowles gets checks every once in a while for having appeared briefly in The Faculty. So he'll get... I know that he got a 9-cent check once.
Hey, guess who's not waiting on those faculty checks anymore? A little guy named John Stewart. So, yeah, it's a really interesting story. And before we kind of close things out here, I want to throw a special shout out to Ted Raimi, because another thing I discovered in this footage was how much Ted Raimi suffered for his brother's art.
Isn't that his entire career?
Pretty much. But in this movie in particular, it's like anytime there was a prosthetic, somebody was in a latex suit, not only was it Ted in the suit, but it was Ted who had to sit under all the plaster while the suit was being made. And, you know, you watch these sequences where they're literally pulling prosthetic feet off and it's just like dripping out. And you're like, oh, that must be the fake blood. It's like, we didn't have any kind of line put in here. This is just sweat. And it's like, oh God, Ted, I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
I am so sorry.
But don't worry. When I finally get to make a Spider-Man movie, I'll totally give you a big role.
You'll be J. Jonah. Oh, who? Oh, you'll be in his office at least.
Yeah.
Damn you, Sam. Damn you. And I also want to play a little game. I think I've done this once or twice before, of Unfiltered Fiancé, which is just...
Oh, here we go.
I have never had an experience in my life like my fiancé watching Evil Dead 2 over my shoulder. Like, there's this thing where it's like, when we watch movies we both really like, I love the experience. But when we watch movies that she doesn't like and I like... It's interesting, and she will not hold back. And some of the
we actually had to talk about this because I was telling you about the experience I had with I was watching one week I just mainlined a bunch of Jean-Claude Van Damme movies in my office.
Nothing wrong with that.
And according to my wife, they are the dumbest sounding movies known to man. And she would just poke. She would want nothing to do with them. She would just poke her head in my office every hour or so and make a comment about whatever stupid line just came out of somebody's mouth.
On the one hand, I'm glad we both married people that are strong-willed enough and opinionated enough to tell us exactly what they're thinking. On the other hand, I heard things like, so he goes into one shed, fights a monster. He goes into another shed, fights another monster. This is a shed-to-shed adventure. And I was like, I never thought about how much this movie was about sheds until you brought that up. Thank you for that. And then...
It's a watershed film.
Oh, shit! Solid pun work, bro. She also said, this was great. How come when people become zombies in movies, it always makes their faces bigger? To which I responded, no, that's just Bruce Campbell's face. She thought it was a makeup prosthetic. And I'm like, no, he's called the Chin for
yeah,
a
no,
reason.
But he does have like all that the cheekbone stuff going
no,
on.
No, I mean like when they put the bladders on him and he's like bursting it, like, but it's like this was literally just him being outside and she hadn't seen him yet. And I'm like, no, that's just his face.
You know, I want to, but one of the things we did not, like we brushed over and I want to talk about before we finish up is, wait, was there a little more Unfiltered Fiancé?
There's a little more.
Okay, let's finish up Unfiltered Fiancé.
So at one point I said that the movie was like a Peter Gabriel video with the wild editing and the stop motion. And then in the scene where the deer on the wall starts laughing at him and then all the other objects in the room start moving around, she goes, and now it's a George Harrison video. So she starts singing Set
I've
On
Got You. My Mind Set On
she
You.
She starts singing the song, and then she's like, she gets to the line about it's going to take time, and she stops, and she goes, oh, please let there be a clock. And as if on cue, he steps back, and the clock is moving around. She goes, there it is! And I'm like, holy shit, this is a George Harrison video all of a sudden.
Well, that video might have been
you
out
think?
Already. Like,
you
it
think?
Might have been a joke. Like he was like, what if we did a horror movie version of the George Harrison video?
Turns out she's accidentally brilliant, and that's what really happened.
I mean, that kind of weird shit happens all the time where people are kind of secretly doing riffs on shit like that.
Yeah,
so that would not
wouldn't
shock
surprise you.
Me it really wouldn't.
Plus, you know what they didn't spend on this movie was a whole lot of precious money. So I think there's
you gotta
another...
spend a whole lot of money to do it right, child.
Or spend a little more money and do it again, child, depending on whether you think it's a sequel or a remake. But yes, anyway.
Yeah, I love how crazy the cinematography on this is. Like, we talked about the one shot, you know, the one really crazy shot. But he does a lot of weird stuff with lenses in this movie to make this one room look like 20 different rooms.
True.
And then he gets these crazy shots, like he's got that close-up when Bruce Campbell's making this really wacky, crazy face, like right up in the fucking camera lens. And he's using such a weird lens to distort. Like it's almost like he's using a fisheye of some sort to create this really weird sense of perspective. And he does things like that throughout the movie. He tilts the camera in various ways that's odd.
Or Bruce flying backwards through the woods before the preamble ends.
Yeah, and that's stop motion and then spins.
Yeah, it's so crazy.
Yeah, and it's just he's like going nuts with crazy camera shots. It's almost like early Shyamalan to the nth degree.
Interesting.
It's like, oh, wait, I don't have to put the camera here. What if I did this crazy thing? And all that experimentation makes for what this movie is and how bizarre and strange a tone it is. And I think it all works. Like that's also why there's no movie that looks just like it or True. Feels just like it. It really is its own beast that doesn't have much of a structure to it.
Right.
That doesn't make a ton of logical sense. The characters don't make particularly logical sense. It just is. And it's just entertaining the whole way through. And you can't really, it's not a movie that the things that are weird or bizarre, you can really laugh at in a, wow, what a bad movie sort of way, because there isn't a goddamn thing in this movie that wasn't intentional.
True. Like, that's entirely true.
Like, this is a movie that's the kind of bonkers movie that people like us, you know, do love to occasionally watch. Something like Megaforce. Yeah. Like, it's imagine if Megaforce was entirely intentional.
That should be on a fucking Junk Food Cinema t-shirt. Imagine if Megaforce were entirely intentional.
That's kind of, this is what this, like, this is the, it's what I think really works about this movie is it takes a very tired genre at this point. Keep in mind, this is 87. The number of times people have watched groups of people go out into the woods to be murdered in cabins is astro-fucking-nomical.
It's astronomical.
It is just crazy how many movies there are where people just get killed in cabins, killed at camps.
Well, hell, Cabin in the Woods, the cabin in Cabin in the Woods is modeled after this cabin in the woods.
Oh, yeah. No, the basement in particular is the base was designed after the basement in this cabin. Yeah, it was meant to look that way. It was meant to feel that way. but it was riffing on something that was riffing on what was going on in pop culture at the time, and it grows stale. So stale that that's where can we send these monsters? Can we send them to the moon? Can we send them to New York? But he was riffing on material he'd already tread on seriously. And that's what I find so interesting, is that the first movie is very sincere, and this movie is very in love with what it's doing, but not sincere about its horror. It's sincere about its character. It genuinely loves Ash. Like, that's the one thing that could be said is Evil Dead 2 and Evil Dead and Army of Darkness.
And in true Old Testament style, it puts the character it loves through the worst shit imaginable,
so that he can be the hero that stops evil.
Yes.
Like, that's the thing is, and here, think about this for a moment. If you've never let it run through your head, there is the scene where they're looking through the book and we see Ash there, drawn almost in crayon. Where he's unrecognizable unless you've seen the end of the movie. Like, the first time you watch this movie, you don't know that that's Ash and that he's got a chainsaw in his hand. But think about the fact that by the time this movie happens, Ash has already destroyed the evil. So he's fighting the evil he's already vanquished. Because he didn't really vanquish it. He keeps sending the evil back and forth through time is essentially what Ash ends up doing.
Yeah.
Which is why I was on that team of very much wanting to see an Evil Dead 4, which they were going to call Evil Dead 4. And then, of course, it was going to be Ash versus Freddy versus Jason. And now we have the TV show, Ash versus the Evil Dead.
Yeah, very much so. And I think the conclusion we've come to tonight is that on the one hand you have Evil Dead, on the other hand you have Evil Dead 2, and you can go back and forth which one's better, which one's superior, or you can do the full Joey Tribbiani and put your hands together, my friend.
Hail he who has come from the skies to deliver us from the tales of the Deadites! Hail! 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 Hail!
No!
Hail!
No!
Which brings us to the junk food pairing. And Cargill, I think you actually set this up very nicely without any kind of notice from me. The junk food pairing is a variety pack of Fanta, because there are plenty of gushing fountains of blood in this movie, as Cargill mentioned, that are prismatic in their presentation. They are of all different colors. And there is one point where one of the bumpkins gets dragged into the basement, and the blood that starts pouring out is not only copious, it's apparently carbonated. It's got like white fizz all around the outside, and I started thinking, oh, well, it kind of looks like a Fanta. And then it was like, oh, well, that would also explain why every single demon, every single person bleeds in a different color. One a demon, no, one a Fanta.
Do they actually have Fanta variety packs?
I don't know. But Fanta, you can just buy a, you know what, I bet you'll cost you 33 cents a bottle to buy a variety pack of Fanta and make it yourself.
Or if you're from the Midwest, Faygo.
Yeah, but that gets into some dark territory with the ICP, and I'm not willing to infringe upon the IP of the ICP. That's all I'm saying.
You down with ICP?
Yeah, I don't think you know me. Well, that is the end of the episode. Thank you so much for joining us, Deadites. And if you would like to hear more of what we do, if you would like to hear the sequel, the remake, the reimagining, we're not really sure of this podcast, you can always check out our back catalog on iTunes as well as on Blog Talk Radio. And you can follow us on Twitter at Junk Food Cinema. Like the podcast on Facebook, Junk Food Cinema. And of course, you can support us patreon.com/junkfoodcinema if you really like what we do and want to see us ink some new blood into the Necronomicon. Cargill, where can people find you online?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Massawyrm. That's MASSAWYRM. And you can find my new book, Sea of Rust, wherever you buy books. It is out. It is available. You can get it on Kindle. You can get it on Audible. Or you can buy the book at your local indie bookstore, from Amazon, wherever you buy books.
Awesome. You can find me on Twitter at BriarGuySalisbury or Facebook, facebook.com/BriarSalisburyCritic. Definitely leave us those ratings and reviews on iTunes. That helps us move up the list, helps more people to hear about us. We really, really appreciate that. So anything you can do to help us out there, we are indebted to you. Well, that's going to do it for this Junk Food Cinema episode on Evil Dead 2, Dead by Dawn, colon...
Dead by Dawn.
Dead by Dawn.
Dead by Dawn.
Colon, imagine if Megaforce were entirely intentional.